Hello, my name is Connor.
And I'm Jason.
And you are listening to the Amazed and Perplexed podcast.
So, we are grateful to be with you. It has been a minute, and we are in Mark chapter 2. And just to remind me, the way we're doing this is we're going to be reading about this paralyzed man who receives forgiveness and healing. And what we're wanting to do with our time is to give dignity to every mentioned or named group or person. And we don't do that comprehensively, but it's just to think through what are the perspectives of the other people? What are Jesus' disciples thinking, feeling, the man being healed, the friends that are providing the context to have healing, even Jesus, both as God and as a man. And those are very cohesive, I'm sure, inside him. But I think it helps us sometimes think, what would the man Jesus be thinking, or the God Jesus be thinking in this view? So as we read, we just encourage you to be thinking in that way.
Yeah, and I think it's a cool little passage to cover, because it's something that I believe we covered in maybe the first 15 episodes of Amazed and Perplexed. And so it'd just be interesting after the fact to go and, you know, did we say the exact same things? I assume we won't at all. But it'll just be interesting to, as we have these different frames and as we're, you know, slightly different people several years down the road, what tracks. And so for me, the first thing that I want to ask you this, Jason, because you have more, history with my question. So I've always been fascinated. One of the things that, like, you know, foreign, non-American people, there's always like 1,000 things you can criticize America for, rightfully so most of the time. But one of the things, when you talk to people who grew up in different places, they'll comment about one of the things that America does better than almost any other country is their, accessibility. So like people with like disabilities, like their accessibility features that are mandated in America are usually a lot better than in other foreign countries. And they'll talk about the sort of benefit that is and how that helps people. And so I know you spend a lot of time in foreign countries, even lived in foreign countries for a little while. And so for me in America, obviously people with severe disabilities, people who are paralyzed, I'm not going to be able to fully get my mind around that. I'm not going to be able to fully empathize, but I've talked to people with that. But I'm just wondering for you, did you have anything like when you lived abroad, somebody who, not just like in America where maybe was a little bit better off, but somebody who lived in a poorer place, who really had to rely on his personal infrastructure of friends and family?
That's a great question. Great setup. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I'm trying to think of, was there anybody in my world? I lived in Ecuador for a couple of years. Is there anybody in my world that was wheelchair bound? And I can't think of somebody as a constant that was wheelchair bound. I know for myself, I was there for a week and I dislocated my knee, which typically you wrap it in a brace, you know, you give you crutches, you'll heal. But they didn't have braces, so they put me in a full plaster cast from top to bottom of my leg. And then they didn't have crutches for like a week and a half. And so that was just a tiniest taste. But yeah, you would be in the United States, or I think in just in general in our culture, we want, I think most people, at least when they're not selfishly thinking, they want everybody to have at least access to things. And that's the word you use. And I think that's exactly right. And you think differently about your life when you have access or don't have access. It frames how you think about your future and how you think about hope in general, you know? So a person in these times, now the upside would be they felt much more responsible for the people in their village than we do. Like, I don't feel, if my neighbor goes to the hospital, unless I'm a personal friend of his, I don't feel compelled simply because I live in proximity to go take care of him. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I feel like
you might give them a ride if it corresponds with your schedule.
Exactly right. And do I even know that? Like, I know my neighbor's names, but other than that, I don't know big stuff going on with them, because we drive and park in our garage and shut the door, and, you know, we might not see each other for days on end. But in this culture, you would have, partly because of total necessity, but you would have a sense of this. So the upside for a person in this time that's paralyzed is the community probably cared about your big needs. The downside is, I don't think accessibility would be on their mind. You know, they'd be like, well, of course this man can't go here because we have no way to get him there, or we'd have to carry him everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing. Even today, if I was paralyzed, I would be outfitted with some kind of mode to get me from point A to point B. It may not be practical in all situations, but I'd be in a wheelchair. I'd be in something. There's no, I mean, other than what we would care, we would probably perceive as makeshift crutches. You know, this guy was carried everywhere. Yeah. You know, if he's needing to be carried here, he's needing to be carried everywhere. And then you're talking about, you know, they had 6 day work weeks. You know, that's one of the reasons why they held the Sabbath. So that means 6 days out of every seven, he was probably carried to a place to beg or for some other purpose that served the family. And then he was just stuck there. Yeah. So that's it. And I don't know if you've ever been carried by people. I mean, I know crowd serving seems like really cool. It's only cool for a minute. And then it's like scary as heck. So that's what I always think about when I read this.
We're going to have to do another episode on Jason's crowd surfing history.
That's right.
But yeah, I'm so excited to talk about this. And one thing that you said, and we'll read the actual passage here, but just the idea for these people at this time. So like what eventually happens, right? They cut the hole in the roof. They get the guy through. Jesus heals him and forgives him. And what I'm thinking about here is what the mindset of these people would have been, of who God was and what their access to God would have been. And, you know, I think about the radical statement that Jesus makes, by one, giving this man forgiveness and healing. It's this beautiful example for the rest of his ministry and to us that, hey, your perception that God is this far off, like you need all these different things, you need to be this kind of person to get to God, that's not correct. That's not what this is about. This is not who I am. This is not what I've come to do. In fact, the God of Israel is a lot more accessible than you've been led to believe.
Yeah, that's really good. I mean, that is really good. So I'm going to read this, and especially if you're new to the podcast, our whole goal, we don't, Connor and I, we don't study these passages beforehand. Now, we've taught them
before. I've never read this before in my entire
You've never
life.
Seen Just the Bible. Exactly. What is this thing called? The Bible?
Bible.
We're reading it and we're asking ourselves two fundamental questions is what amazes us and perplexes us with this, because we want to be free to struggle with Scripture. We want to be free to wonder, and we find it a really useful lens, if you will, to say, huh, what don't I understand? What bothers me? And just to give us the freedom to interact with the fullness of who we are. And so we invite you, as we're reading, ask yourself, what amazes me about this? Especially if I'm just witnessing it for the first time, I close my eyes and I'm just imagining this. And then what perplexes me? Why would a person who has access to the fullness of God not do this? Or why would you choose to do that? And so just want to really empower you to experience this right now, this text. Beginning in verse 1, it says, a few days later, when Jesus again entered Capernaum, the people heard that he had come home. They gathered in such large numbers that there was no room left, not even outside the door, and he preached the word to them. Some men came, bringing to him a paralyzed man carried by four of them. Since they could not get him to Jesus because of the crowd, they made an opening in the roof above Jesus by digging through it, and then lowered the mat the man was lying on. When Jesus saw their faith, he said to the paralyzed man, "Son, your sins are forgiven." Now, some teachers of the law were sitting there thinking to themselves, why does this fellow talk like that? He's blaspheming. Who can forgive sins but God alone? Immediately, Jesus knew in his spirit that this was what they were thinking in their hearts. And he said to them, why are you thinking these things? Which is easier, to say to this paralyzed man, your sins are forgiven, or to say, get up, take up your mat and walk? But I want you to know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins. So he said to the man, I tell you, get up, take your mat and go home. He got up, took his mat, and walked out in full view of them all. This amazed everyone, and they praised God, saying, we have never seen anything like this. So, Connor, as you make that journey again through this story, what hits you? What amazes you?
It says, when Jesus saw their faith, he then goes on to forgive this man's sins, the there being his friends who carried him there. And I just think about, you know, when I was younger in my faith, I was always really fascinated by the I don't know if determinism is the right word, like, you know, free will versus determinism versus, you know, how much does God plan or ordain, and then even being possibly overwhelmed by the, like, if I don't talk to this person, you know, if I don't tell them about Jesus and I'm the only Bible they ever hear, and then they go to hell and it's all terrible and it's my fault or whatever. And so for me, that's not where I'm currently at or been at for a long time, but I'm just so amazed by one, the way that God allows his kingdom to be built just by community. I mean, I think it's just staggering to me because, you know, I can look at that mindset and that I talked about that I had earlier, that's like, oh, you're the only Bible somebody will ever have, or, you know, it's all on you, and be like, that's not right. That's not biblical. That's toxic. That's far off. But then there's the other tendency to become individualistic and to be like, well, as long as I'm doing my thing, as long as I'm focused, as I'm reading, I'm praying, I'm tithing, whatever it would be, then it's all good. But you go, no, like that's not the case. My faith, my work, my acts of faith have the potential to build the kingdom here. And so for me, I'm trying to remind myself, because I come out of a very specific mindset, and because I'm more introverted, it's really easy for me to get focused on my faith journey, on what God is doing in my life. And I think that those things are true. It is a personal relationship. But for me, just drawing out that, like, this is a we thing. This isn't just a me thing.
I think that's, yeah. And I think that shows up too in the, I always would want to interview the owner of the house. And these are not, you know, they didn't have shingles on the house and all the structure, you know, is probably thatch. And, you know, that's my full extent of my vocabulary about describing
thatch and
other stuff, you know. So it wasn't like it.
Jason, do you know what a thatch is? You just start throwing it in. So anyways, I was talking to this guy about thatching, and he was
a good thatcher as far as I knew. But anyway, so it wasn't that. So it wasn't like it would take them thousands of dollars to replace this, like if they came to my house now and ripped open my roof and my ceiling and all that ductwork and everything. But it's still an invasion. It's still rude, I think, in all cultures, you know?
Yeah, there's no story. And then the guys went up there and helped him fix it. It took them an hour or two, and it was okay. Yeah. I mean, I've been in situations in churches where there was like an event or something crazy cool happened, and then like there was this big mess afterwards. And suddenly, when there was 100 people or more in this room, and suddenly they all filter out, and there's this big mess, and stuff's turned over, and you go like, really? None of these Jesus people are going to stay and help pick this up? I mean, I know you've been there 1,000 yes. times.
Absolutely, yeah, and so I think that's a fascinating dynamic, but yeah, just the dynamic of Jesus taking life in, and I mean, every disappointment you've ever had is completely correlated to your expectations, you know, because if I'm expecting to get in my car and have a blowout and roll my car 3 times and spend a week in the hospital, then it's not going to surprise me. I may dread it, mm-hmm. but it's not going to disappoint me because I knew it was going to happen. But so Jesus, clearly he's a human, so he has expectations. I'm going to sit here and teach, and wow, you know, and that's always weird to me, and maybe I'll include that in the perplexing piece of my things, but just that dynamic of what expectations is he bringing to these situations, because he often reacts in, to me, completely dumb ways. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, if you want everybody to hear your message and you want as many people as possible to be here, but then you find him, he's telling people don't tell, and he's thinning his numbers, and he offends the crowd, you know, pretty much all the time. And so this is the first time that I can remember, well, the whole town has come to him before when he was doing some healing, but they've never described it as not just standing room only, but you cannot even get outside the house. Like, so these guys are having to finagle to get there. But yeah, this idea of him being Jesus, I think we can talk about this in terms of boundaries or differentiation, where Jesus could have easily said, guys, what are you doing? This is just so rude, you know? Mm-hmm. And instead, he just met them where they were. He included them. You know, I mean, he's responding to everybody. And then the other piece that is fascinating is he mind reading? And that's weird, because they said they're thinking in their heart. So you got a lot of perplexing dynamics here. But is he mind reading or just sensing, I know when I say this, this is what people are going to be thinking? Because I've been preaching before, and I could choose. Let's talk about Holy Spirit. If I say to some audiences, hey, I think the Holy Spirit is doing this, I know those certain people will be uncomfortable. But if I say, I think God is doing this, people are like, oh yeah, God is doing that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But if I chose to say the Holy Spirit's doing it, I would then know that some people in their hearts would be uncomfortable.
Sure.
And they might be thinking, well, what's he saying here, and what does that mean?
So, and here's what I wonder, you know, I think we've done this before, and I've been perplexed at why Jesus is okay with this property damage. And I wonder, and this was a conversation we were having just before we started recording, I wonder if that's a presupposition by myself to think that Jesus is, by Jesus not prefacing all that he does here with saying, hey, I love you, sin's forgiven, get up and walk, but like, you shouldn't be doing property damage. the fact that Jesus doesn't do that in my mind, if I don't think about it, is him condoning just rampant property damage.
Right.
And maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't know. But what I think is interesting is this seems to be an example of Jesus. It'd be very easy. And it's, again, it's easy for me. I've been in a situation where people left a big mess or left a lot of work for me to clean up, or just really rude Christians, really rude in terms of leaving a big cleanup mess for me. And I've let my frustration at their inability to follow the rules or their whatever would be their rudeness, I've let it affect how I viewed an entire night of the work of God. And I don't know if Jesus specifically condones the property damage here, but you go like, is Jesus like, I'm not letting this get in the way of this man's forgiveness and healing.
Yeah.
Whereas I often want people, I want God to move, but I also want it to be bracketed by, you know, Jesus' qualification, you know, whereas like, I'm cool if God's going to do something out of the ordinary, but I also want him to be like, no, this is out of the ordinary. We'll let this get past this one time, but I just want you to know this is out of the ordinary. So most of the time we're going to be in the ordinary box, but I just want to bracket this by qualifying all of this.
Yeah, I think that is true. And then the human, and maybe this is the real American church mentality, I'm thinking of another way besides just being unclean, like not unclean, but you know, not taking responsibility for cleaning up. Have you ever been in a situation where somebody said the wrong word? Like when I was a teenager, one of my peers got up and spoke to the congregation. It was a big deal, and he said, "Man, I really screwed up." Uh-huh. Okay, I didn't even think about it. It did not cross my mind they said something wrong, you know? But afterward, he got at least 6 different adults coming up and say, "Hey, you shouldn't be saying screwed."
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, okay. So then I've been in other contexts, even recently, where we're at a gathering of Christians and somebody's sharing their story and they cuss and think about the worst cuss word. They're using that cuss word at times. And they're not doing it like just bang, 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 but it's showing up as they tell their real story, and it's really hard. And the room absorbs it beautifully. And somebody could sit there and say, "Are you guys saying that you condone cussing and taking the Lord's name in vain and this kind of thing?" And I can't emphasize enough, it's not like this person was on a rant. They were just experiencing, reliving some of these really hard things in their life, and that word would come out. And so it was such a beautiful thing. And just walking away from it thinking it would be good, it would also be fine for us to say to this person, "Hey, in the future, it would be less distracting if you wouldn't say these words." You know what I mean? But simultaneously, for me to come and say that to him now, you know, the guy that shared it, what all he would hear is, "You're not welcome here."
Man, I love imagining Jesus going up to these guys afterwards, putting their hand on their shoulder, like, "Hey, next time, just like wait till I'm done. Don't cut the hole in the house." Yeah.
Who's the drama queen? It's like, "Hey,
I love your faith. I love it all, but just next time, just wait, you know, wait a little bit." I love that picture. And I loved that story you shared, because we all have, and again, like, you know, for me, hearing somebody curse and telling their story is not going to bother me. And so I can look at somebody and be like, "Really? You're going to get thrown off by this beautiful story of God working in somebody's life?"
Right.
But there is a thing, and I might not know exactly what it is, but there is a thing that somebody could do or say or believe that is not the core message of what Jesus is about, and it's not getting in the way of his kingdom being built. But there is a thing out there that I am my heart is ready to jump on to allow me to halt the brakes on God doing something.
Right. Absolutely. I'm going to go ahead just for time purposes and attach this. There's multiple things that amaze me about Jesus here, but it is this dynamic of the way God uses our real personalities to create events, and he works and gives us opportunity. One of these four had to be really audacious. One of the four guys carrying him, right? Am I assuming four? Is it just friends?
Yeah, I think.
Is it just a friend? No, by four of them.
Yeah. I said they're friends, and then said something like, and then four of them.
So right, yeah. And so one of them, because you've been in those situations where somebody says, "Okay, we were going to do it this way. The reality has presented us with different options. And so I say we go up and we dig. Now, I need to have some kind of survey of that time. How offensive is it when somebody tears up your roof for a healing purpose for a greater reason? But I bet you not all four feel like this is a great idea.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's somebody that had to say, and you've been in groups.
I've been the guy. I'm the guy like, this is a dumb idea. Yeah, I hate
it.
Me
too, me too. Because I would be like, I love being with people that like take strong initiative, that's against the flow. And that's true when I didn't honor God with my life, and it's also true when I do honor God with my life. So you can go against flow and be very much with God and for God. But this is such a beautiful moment, but it took somebody's audacious personality to engage this. And it's just, I'm so impressed with the guy. You know, we would not have this story if he didn't have the audacity to say, guys, we are not taking no for an answer. And I'm telling you, when you're the Jesus person in this story, or maybe even worse, the homeowner in this story, it's like, you should have taken no for an answer. You know, I heal everywhere, you know, kind of thing.
That's good.
But it is that part of how God honors this one. And maybe all four of them had the same audacity, but my sense of friend groups is usually I have one that's the envelope pusher and it's like, hey, we can do this. And you have two that are like, hey, I can see this. And you got one that's so stressed out.
one the entire time while he's got a leg is thinking, okay, if we get through this, I'm going to jump down. If Jesus seems mad, I'll be like, Jesus, oh, this was their idea. Exactly, like, right.
Speech is already ready to give. It's like, I just need to know I honor home ownership and I'm against property damage. So it's just a funny thing to imagine these four men and what happens the day after. How do they tell this story? Because they're going to tell the story different than Mark is telling this story because they're a different human. Luke and Matthew. I can't remember if that shows up in both of those. It's definitely Luke. But it's like he tells it slightly different. Mm-hmm. So if you've got the men inspired by God, and of course Mark is not an eyewitness here, you know, well, neither of them were, you know, eyewitnesses. So it's that idea of you know, they're having to take it from somebody else that's telling them this story. And even those stories are slightly different. So certainly the man that's lowering him down, he's going to tell a lot of what it was like where, okay, the lowering, how frightening is it? It's one thing to carry somebody. It's another thing to lower them down through a roof, you know, and obviously we're assuming it's one story and 6 to 8 foot tall. But it's like, that's scary, you know. And then the feeling of, and this could easily be a perplexion for me, but that feeling
go into
of...
Go into perplexion.
Yeah, okay, so I'll just run into that. But that idea of you lower him down, what is the expectation of these four men? You know, and Jesus, I mean, I don't know if you can say, I can't say this conclusively, like this absolute fact, but when they lower him down and Jesus looks at him and he says, son, your sins are forgiven. I don't know how much time passes between that statement and the next thing, you know, that Jesus says, but it's got to be enough time for the guys to think those, you know, three sentences, you know, why does this fellow talk like that? You know, he's blaspheming. You know, so there's some space between, if I'm the guy still holding the rope or the side of the sheet or whatever, you know, I'm like, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. Like, it is not at all evident that they're seeking forgiveness for this guy's sins. I mean, it's so, I think if you're in the crowd, you know, and you're just noticing this rabbi, everybody knows why this guy's being lowered down. Mm-hmm. And it has nothing to do, I think it was so jarring, you know. And then you get the sense that Jesus wouldn't have healed the guy if these guys weren't thinking, how dare he say this? Mm-hmm. You know, now maybe he was setting it up to make the point, you know, from the start. But we don't get the idea that Jesus knows everything. There are certain things that there are times it seems he doesn't know what's going to happen. So I don't know. It's just really perplexing why he would start there.
So is there a sense, I know this is the case with some disabilities, with some sicknesses, that like there would have been a perception among these people that... well, they did something to make God angry or mad. I don't know. Maybe that's something at play. It could be. I don't know.
That's an interesting observation. Yeah. So the idea is it might not have struck them as funny as it strikes me.
Well, yeah. I wonder. And again, like it's been a while since I studied this, but you know, would the perception have been, were these two married together where they go, yeah, of course he needs his sins forgiven because he's paralyzed. That means God, you know, that means God's really mad at him. So like, I don't know. I would think people are people 2000 years ago. So today there's the physical thing directly in front of them would be probably the first thing on their mind. But you do wonder if it's paired to where like in their minds, like it's just inseparable where you go, well, this person is living this really hard life. And if they were good, holy people, then God wouldn't allow that to happen to them. I just wonder if that's at play.
I think that's a great observation. They very much thought more holistically than we do. If I have a physical problem, I break a bone, my first thought is I need to get to the doctor. I may pray for God to provide me a good doctor. I may pray for you know, it not to be that painful. But I'm not thinking, oh, God, please forgive my sins. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But I think there is a chance, based on other stories in the New Testament, that they were thinking that. So yeah. That actually makes a lot of sense why there wouldn't have been a more, they might have, the general public, we're only told the teachers of the law thought negatively about it, but the general public might have been, oh, that's really awesome. You know, that that's part of the amazement is that, wow, he forgave his sins.
Yeah.
And then to the less educated, they may not have even been troubled by it because they're like, oh, I guess rabbis do that.
Well, and again, it gets to the point where like the teachers that are mad about Jesus, they're really mad about this. And we don't get a follow-up that they're really angry about the healing. And you get his friends, you know, like what his friends' reaction would have been when they heard Jesus say this and when they were watching it all go down. And you go, Jake's a great guy. Like, why are like, you know, like really more concerned with the whole like he can't work, he can't run, you know, all the like I'm endlessly fascinated by what they all would have been thinking about and the difference between, you know, just your average laborer, you know, Israelite versus like a ruling elite religious leader. And the difference is, and I think the cool thing about Jesus and just how brilliant he is you see it all the time where he says something and he's, I think it could mean a different thing to lots of different people in that room and it'd be intentional. And so I think if what I mentioned is partly going on, I don't think it takes away even from all the other points, because I think Jesus is recognizing, one, there's a disconnect between what the Israel, like how the Jewish faith is being practiced and how it's being preached. And there's a separation between the different classes about how it's being perceived as. And so one, I'm just always trying to remind myself, man, Jesus is brilliant in this. And I think if there are a lot of different interpretations of that, I don't think that's because we're missing the one golden interpretation. I kind of wonder with the story, is it because Jesus is purposely trying to speak to a lot of different elements here?
I think so. Well, and I have come to say a lot in just interpreting my own life or when somebody's trying to solve a problem and we're talking about it, God is always doing more than one thing. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the nature of him. And so there's multiple things happening. So there's a lot of truths about what God is doing here.
Yeah.
You know, so what perplexes you?
Yeah. And I think this is, I can say intellectually that I can see myself in the perspective of the religious leaders who see this man healed and then don't become his biggest, you know, defenders and disciples or whatever. Because like, oh, I do that sort of thing all the time. But I just fundamentally, I find it hard to believe that not everybody in this room goes, okay, this is it. This is the guy. Like now let's, you know, do absolutely everything. And the teachers that are there who are like vying, you know, they're in Jerusalem with him. Like, no, this guy, like, and so I'm constantly perplexed. I just, what is all happening in these hearts and minds? And like, I believe it to a certain extent that I have seen miraculous works of God or seen God do things and minimize it or explained it away or whatever. But I go like, man, there's just a part of me that will always have this visceral feeling of like, no, no, no. If I saw somebody I'd known for a long time be paralyzed, like I wouldn't act with that sort of, buffoonery, or I don't know. Maybe they are better. Maybe these specific teachers are like, we don't get a backstory about what happens to them afterwards. Maybe they are a little bit better after the healing and they believe, I don't know, but I'm perplexed.
That's really good. And you know, what's interesting. Okay. It'd be more congruent. It'd fit better if they did one thing or the other. Either they say, whoa, he can forgive sins. And he validated it with doing something so supernatural, it can't be explained. Like, we are not, there may be some healing that's going on, and there clearly is another by other people in the community, although they don't talk about it a lot. But it's not this, not a complete healing from paralysis. Like, and we don't know when it started, if it was just an accident or he's born, you know, some defect. But it is that idea that how can they either need to say, oh, wow, we need to learn more, because that blew out of the water everything we knew. Or they need to stick to their guns because he blasphemed, because here's the truth. By their law, he blasphemed. Mm-hmm. And that's prosecutable. You know what I mean? And that the stunning thing to me is how much, and I guess this is another amazing piece, how much he baffles them that for most of their interaction with him, they do not know what to do. They come in and they feel very powered. So if you talk about privilege in a culture, they had all the privilege in the culture that a Jewish person could have. Now, they didn't have Roman privilege, mm-hmm. but they had Jewish privilege. And they also realized that their privilege only, they relied on the culture being stable. Because as soon as the culture got unstable, they could lose their power. So they had a lot of reasons. They had a lot of really good reasons for Jesus not to be successful because it would turn things upside down. But I'm like, how do you stay in the middle? I can understand saying, man, I believe him because you just can't deny what I just saw. And I can understand them saying, look, even regardless.
I don't care. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. He's still, the law is the law. And they do neither.
Yeah.
That's really perplexing.
And it is. It makes sense. Like at the end, when that becomes a reaction, you go, okay, like the reaction at the end of Jesus' life for these people who have seen this sort of thing happen where these, you know, false messiahs rise up and cause all these sorts of problems. And then, you know, Rome brutally puts it down. And oftentimes they will punish, you know, religious leaders at the time for not, you know, taking care of that. And you go, okay, I can understand it definitely from a human perspective. I'm going to protect my power or whatever, do whatever I possibly can to make sure that there's not some sort of brutal tamp down by the Roman Empire. But then you go with this. Yeah, I don't know. And maybe it is. Maybe these same teachers will become the poisoning, you know, whispers in the night to all the other religious leaders. So who knows what their backstory is. But yeah, I'm just left at a place like I want to know more. You know, I want to know more how they reacted.
I'm curious, as we wrap this up, sometimes we do this episode, sometimes we don't. But if you were to say, here's the thing I'm taking away from this experience that we've had, you know, interacting mm-hmm. with the word. What do you think that would be?
Yeah, I think that the challenge for me is my natural assumption is to be the fourth guy in your story, in your analogy, and I think one, I don't think we're always called to be the audacious person. I don't think that's always the right answer. But I want to be more of a I want to be more of a cheerleader. When somebody has an audacious idea or perspective or wants to move in a way that feels so passionate and so strong and dangerous, feels dangerous. I want to be the kind of person that doesn't feel like he needs to qualify, doesn't feel like he needs to have an exit plan, but can just recognize when somebody else is being moved by the Spirit in a way that is so powerful that they can't not do something dangerous. And I just want to be—I want to be more of a part of that.
Man, that is so good and so hard.
Yeah,
especially if you're the one in charge of the whatever it is, you know.
Sure. Well,
but you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and it's so complicated because like the easy things, you come to me with an audacious idea. I trust you. You know, I love you. I trust your heart. Okay, I can jump in with you most likely, unless it's like crazy. but the hard part becomes like, oh, just a, you know, brother or sister that I go to church with that has this idea. I like them. We're friends. We're close. But like, I haven't been with them for 8 years. You know, doing Bible studies or whatever. Jumping in with that person and trusting that God is acting in their life just as much as he's acting in mine. Man, it's hard. It's really hard.
It is. I'll tell you, even in the lesser things. So we had a guy that would come around and, I mean, he was a member at our church and he would always, every time I'd see him, he'd either have a problem with something we were doing or he'd have a suggestion of something we could do. But his heart at the end of it, he'd been through a lot and, I just love the guy, you know. But one of the things he suggested several times is we needed to get a church pet. And I'm like, so you're suggesting we'd have an animal that just be roaming around the building? Yeah, yeah. And we would take care of him. We're like, who's the we here? Because I think it's a me. Like you're saying, you should take care of him.
Jason, you need a dog.
And I'm not a fan of pets anyways, if you know me, just allergies and that kind of thing. But what's interesting is that man has actually passed away. But within 3 years of that suggestion, we started having people show up that needed support animals, you know? And so then we've had this ongoing conversation about Okay, so if you can have the animal, but you keep it contained, and it's not like we there was one person that would bring a small dog that was in like a carrier, so you didn't really see the dog, but every once in a while the dog would and it real yappy and it'd bark, and you know, we just roll with it, you know, kind of thing. So I'm like, it's very interesting. I don't know if it's a good idea to have a church pet or not. I can tell you all the bad reasons.
Yeah.
But I do understand. This is a guy that's saying, hey, there's some way that this way that God blesses me. I wonder, and I'm sure he had pictures in his mind of how that would bless. And so even in that, as far as risk, relatively speaking, that's a small risk. It's a risk I don't want to take still.
Yeah.
But it is that thing and how hard it is. And even further revealing, I call things God. Well, that's not of God, or that's of God, largely based on my comfort zone. Like, there are a few things. If we're killing innocent people, I'm like, that's not of God. I'm safe to say there. But who gets to speak for God? Because when Jesus says, I come when I have authority, that's fascinating. And so I guess for me, my takeaway would be that just the idea of really challenging myself, is the voice in my head the voice of God? Or is it just something I made up based on my experience? And it doesn't mean because it's in my head it's wrong. But I do need to introduce a pause there, especially when I'm listening to somebody that is excited about God. I do need to introduce a pause there that says, okay, I need to wait and really listen for God in this. Because a crazy person's bringing it, which would have been how the teachers of the law thought about Jesus. You know, he's an outlier. He's kind of crazy. He doesn't have the authority or the credentialing to be here. Jesus. I'm not saying the guy who died was Jesus. I'm simply saying if God... I worked through Jesus, and I would have sat there and observed and been like, this guy, Jesus, he's crazy. I can't just dismiss things because I don't think it makes sense. And so just introducing maybe a better commitment to, I want to listen well.
So good. Thanks for listening. Grace, peace, and love.